Wait, it's March? Welcome to the sound of one man clapping. I am the one man coming to you direct from the bunker. It is Sunday, the 1st of March in my world, and as usual, life is good. We are vomiting our way through 2026 at breakneck speed. It is actually ridiculous, but here we are. Back to my usual format today with the games that we're going to go down the rabbit hole in FOMO Mofo, and I'll let you know everything that's incoming, let's do this right, incoming, 4 exclamation marks, and we'll chat with the voices in my head about that bloody March hair. It's all his fault. On with the show. Well, forgive me, OMC crew, for I have sinned. It has been 2 weeks since my last confession. In that 2 weeks, I've done some pretty good gaming. It's been quite good, actually. So this term, I say term, I speak in terms because Super Trooper and I both have daughters who are of an age and going to school, and our stars have aligned this year. And well, for now, watch this space. Thursday nights are once again Arkham Horror Night. So we started a new Arkham Horror campaign. We've started The Circle Undone. I don't know anything about it. I'm going in blind. Super Trooper's built two characters. Loving my deck so far. And we're playing with all the gorgeous bits for Christmas and birthday last year. Super Trooper got an upgrade. He got some amazing metal tokens, metal bits, metal crates, metal, what are they, Doom and Clues, and the whole lot. Those came from Tinkertown on Etsy. They are amazing. I may have mentioned them before. Don't look unless you really don't like keeping money in your bank account. So we started that campaign. It's going well so far. We're still alive. We're still playing. So we started that a couple weeks ago. So we're still trying to get another session back to the table, but enjoying so far. Always love me some Arkham Horror. Started playing. I introduced the Peanut to some more complicated games. And we're talking about two-player head-to-head knife fight in a phone booth type stuff. So she and I, we played Compile. So Compile, the first half of the game of Compile, there was a lot of, huh? What am I supposed to do with this? And by the end of the Compile, she was like, okay, I get this. We need to play this again. I'm not going to talk about Compile at length because I talk about Compile a lot of this board cast. It's a board cast. It might be time. It's 11:49. It's a bit of a later start. I might be suffering caffeine wear off. It's the crash on the other end of the bell curve. We talk about Compile a lot here in these little chats, but we also play Duel for Cardia. Now, Duel for Cardia is this really clever little system. I call it a system. It's not a system, it's a game. And you have 16 cards, and each of those cards does something. One, they are numbered 1 to 16, that is their strength. And two, they have a special ability down the bottom of the card. You're going to each play a card blind, face down. You're going to flip them over. And whoever has the highest number on their card will win a token. 5 tokens wins the game. Here's the spicy bit. If you lose that head-to-head battle with that single card flip, you get to use the special power on your card. And they are quite zesty. They will say things like, this whole battle is a tie. And so you might not win, but your opponent also doesn't win. It might say, add 5 points to the card you played 2 rounds ago. So you go 2 rounds ago, you drop a +5 on it. If you've now won that battle, you get to take the token off your opponent. It's a really fantastic little system of back and forth and back and forth. And what's lovely is it scales. So you get, so the Peanut and I, we're playing identical decks. We shuffle them up and you're drawing 3 cards. So you don't have access to all of them all at once. But what you do know is which cards your opponent still has in their deck. You are going to get your 5 points before the deck runs out, but you can see on the table, you can see everything that's been played. Nothing is hidden information that's been previously played because they stay on the table in a row from one side to the other. And so I can look at my hand and go, well, I've got this game is a tie. The Peanut might have the card that says your opponent can't get their power this turn. I don't know. I'm not picking the right things I'm not naming legitimate powers at the bottom. I'm just giving you an example. But you can see on the table what's left in your opponent's hand. And with there only being 16 cards, it's not that hard to do. There are also these lovely little overlay cards. When I say overlay, they're like events or scenario cards. And you put them down and they just add another layer of spice to the game. And then when you're feeling quite competent, you can swap out for the more advanced deck. It's got trickier stuff going on. And in fact, you can do a piecemeal swap out, I think, from memory. So if you want to swap out the five from the base deck to the five in the next level, you can do that. To the best of my knowledge, we haven't done it, but I seem to recall that's in the rules. So there's a fair bit to go in there of back and forth. And it's a really easy, a game is 10 minutes, so you can pull it out. You can play two games, three games in 20, 25 minutes. And it's really nice back and forth. The art's great. It's easy to teach. It's, in fact, you teach it as you play. You just pick your cards up. You teach it as you play. You go, right, you're going to play a card face down. If you have the highest number, you win. If you lose, you get your power. Go. And you play a training game. And a training game, if you're just whizzing through without too much thought, it's done in 5 or 6 minutes, right? Game two gets a little spicier. You ramp it up a little bit. You turn the chili up a touch. And it might be 10, 12 minutes. But it's you know what? For a $25 card game, I am delighted with Duel for Cardia. Can't wait to play it again. Our first game of Duel for Cardia was a lot of, Dad, what does this do? Dad, how do I use this? And then the second game of Duel for Cardia, there was a lot of, from the other side of the table. And she stomped me. She stomped me on the second game, and it was glorious. And so that is designed by Fauzi Bugida, Mathieu Rivero, and Florian Harold. Oh, sorry, arts by Florian Harold, Christina Kaleda, Dominic Meyer, Ingram Schell, and Jonas Schmutzler, and published by Hans im Glück. Not expensive, great fun. Had a dear friend and his family come out from Canada. Hui and I went to school together. I think we first met about grade 11. And so we've been friends a long time. If you've been, tracking the math, I'm 52 this year. We've been friends a long time. And the wonderful thing about modern technology is we have this Facebook group where all of us from high school, we still chat probably at least weekly. Somebody hops on there and drops a meme that's inappropriate to drop outside of this circle because we're all fucked. But he was out with his wife, and his one of their daughters is going to university here in Australia, so we got to catch up with them, and it was fantastic. But Hui came over on Friday all by himself, so it was just him, I, and the peanut. We put the peanut in front of her iPad with some mac and cheese. She was sorted for 6 hours. It was wonderful. And we just caught up. We tested the limits of our 52-year-old livers just a tad. He was making these lovely bourbon and honey and lemon cocktails. I can't remember what it was called, but we had a few. And, he said, hey, we play some board games? And I said, you bet we can. So, yeah, we played Compile. I don't think he was sold on Compile, but we were 3.8 sheets to the wind by the time we pulled Compile out, so I'm not surprised. But we played a couple others. We played Lacuna, which I'm quite a fan of. Lacuna is this gorgeous positional abstract that starts by laying out this silk cloth that covers, it's like a 60 centimeter square, and it's got this lovely floral circle in the middle. And then you treat the big canister that Lacuna comes in, it's like a big cylindrical canister, like a salt and pepper shaker. And you shake it out all over the board, and these lovely little blossoms come out. And you make sure that they aren't clustered too much, you just loosely spread them out a little, and then you start the game. And you have five gorgeous little metal stands. There's five in silver, five in gold, so one of you plays silver, one of you plays gold, and off you go. And so the purpose of the game style or the gameplay of Lacuna, I should say, is you're going to look at the board and there are seven different blossoms. So there's yellow ones and blue ones and green ones and red ones. You get the picture. And what you're looking for is you're looking for connections. So what you're looking for, two that are connected by a line, of which there will be dozens of connections out there when the game starts, dozens and dozens. And you're going to take one of your lovely little metal pawns and you're going to place it between those two blossoms and you're going to collect those two blossoms. Piece of cake, right? You don't have to put your metal pawn in the middle. It doesn't need to be equidistant between those two. In fact, you can have it even touching one as long as you don't move it. And back and forth and back and forth. And so then what's happened is after five rounds, each of us has collected 10 blossoms. There are seven blossoms and there are seven of each. So 49 pieces out on the board. And then what happens is there's a little ruler that comes with the game. You can use a piece of string, whatever you like. And you're going to go around the board, and it's basically, it's area majority-esque in that it's a majority of one, but whichever pawn is out there is closest to the remaining blossoms will collect those blossoms. So you go around and you go, well, this pawn here gets these three, and this the next pawn around gets these five, and the next pawn only gets one. And you go around and you measure and you collect all the blossoms. And then It's whoever has won four of the seven colors. You win by having more than your opponent. So there are seven of each. So if you get to four of a color, you're going to win that color. You don't need to chase it anymore. What's really fantastic about Lacuna is, again, like Duel for Cardia, you can lay it out and go, right, we're going to play a game. This is how it goes. Bing, boom, bing, boom, dun, dun, dun. You can have the whole game done in like 5, 6, maybe 7 minutes, right? But when you're collecting at the end, that's the aha moment when you're looking at the board and you can see people playing it for the first time. They go, aha, I fucking got it. I can see the matrix, because where you place your pawn between the two that you're collecting initially is going to position it wherever it's going to be for the rest of the game. Now, you can pick two that are, you can draw a line to that are on absolutely the opposite ends of the board, so long as there's nothing in between them. So you could sometimes find these two blossoms out there that are absolutely on opposite ends of the board, and it gives you a lot of leeway to drop your pawn in an area where there might not be any other pawns. And it's fabulous. It's a full game of Lacuna is 15 minutes once you've learned how to play, and it's 15 minutes. It's only five moves. You drop your pawn out, you collect two blossoms. But it's as that board state evolves, this is not Go or chess by any means, but it is, there's a lot of thought that can go into where am I putting my next one. You might not plan out, you know, it's more tactical than strategic by a mile. You can't really plan out your next three or four moves. You can scope out two or three good spots, but where your opponent places their pawn is going to meaningfully change your mind, because if they're closer, they're getting the flowers at the end. Lacuna is beautiful. It is gorgeous. It is not expensive. I think I picked my copy up for $23, and it's easy to teach, fun to play, and so we played a couple of games of Lacuna, Hoy and I. That's by Mark Garretts and art by Nick Leifheber and published by CMYK. So later that night, not much later, because as I said, there was a fair bit of golden liquid involved. We'd had a few gorgeous beers to begin with, and what did I do? Oh, I put a lamb on the charcoal. I made flatbread. I made homemade pita flatbread. We had a lovely little salad of farm-ripened tomatoes and feta and chopped parsley. Think of a love child between Greek salad and tabbouleh. It was beautiful. And fresh flatbread, and I got this beautiful lamb leg, and I rubbed it down with lemon and oregano and garlic and olive oil, and I threw it on charcoal for about 3.5 hours. It's just offset, not direct heat offset. So it's like just gently simmering away out on the char. It was beautiful. That's what we had for dinner. It was 11 out of 10 good. So we had that. We had a couple of fabulous beers. And so we also played Orbit. Now, Orbit, I've talked about before. Orbit is owned by Project L. She was kind enough to loan it to me. The Fox really likes Orbit. It's one of those games that I'm looking at going, oh, when that leaves my bunker, we may need to think about getting a copy. Because the Fox really likes Orbit. I think the Peanut will like Orbit. I like Orbit a lot. And now I've noticed here in Australia that the deluxe upgrade bits, you know, the wooden moons and whatnot, are available finally. So there's every opportunity that, you know, when there's nothing else in the queue that I am pre-ordering, that Orbit might enter my own collection. But Orbit is a game, it's a race game. Dr. Reiner's known for race games. This is, of course, by Reiner Knizia. He's known for race games, the Road Quest for El Dorado, one of the most famous. But in Orbit, you basically have a board, and you've got, I think it's eight planets that are following an orbit around the board. Now, this orbit is not spinning around in circles. It's like this bizarre Z zigzag across the board. Some of them cross themselves. These are not orbits that could exist in the physical world, but they are fun for the game. And you've got cards in your hand, you've got three cards, and you're going to play a card each turn, and that card will tell you how many spaces your little spaceship can move, and then it will have little icons on it for the planets, and it will tell you which of the planets are going to move down their orbits. So the card you play will dictate which planets move and how many spaces you will move, because the object of the game is for you to actually pop your little spaceship onto each of the planets and then get back home to your planet first. It's a lovely little game system, because you spend your whole game with three cards, and you get more cards through the game, as in you have a way to unlock more cards in your hand. That just gives you more choices. You're always only ever playing one card. But it's a push-pull between, do I want that planet closer to me, or do I want it further from the Fox? Do I want that planet to move further because she's about to skunk me, or do I need to get that planet closer to me? It's so simple. It's play a card, move yourself, move a planet. There's a couple tiny little layers in there of there's some tokens you can grab around the board, which give you special upgrades. You've got three one-off powers that you can use in the game that give you little extra boosts. But really, that's the game. And it's fabulous. And it's done in 45 minutes. It doesn't overstay its welcome. It's beautiful to look at, as in it's just a gal. It's this solar system board with grids all over it, but you've got these lovely chunky wooden planets on it, and you've got these lovely little 3D spaceships that are zooming around the board, and your player boards are great. It's easy to set up. It's easy to teach from scratch because we were 80% stonker by the time I pulled Orbit out, and Hoy loved Orbit. He really enjoyed it. He beat my ass. He rinsed me at it, but it was fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. So that is, of course, by Dr. Ryan Canizia, art by Vincent Dutre, and published by Bitewing. Bitewing's doing a lot of the publishing for Dr. Canizia these days. They're releasing a lot of campaigns year on year, sometimes two or more in a year, and sometimes two or three games in a campaign. And a lot of those are reskins. I can't remember if Orbit's a reskin or a retheme, but when you have 900 games to your name or whatever it is, it hardly matters anymore. And we also played a game of Land vs. Sea. Now, I hadn't played Land vs. Sea in probably 3 years. And what I love about Land vs. Sea, now Land vs. Sea has two or three different extra levels of expansion. Well, not expansion, but say modules in the box that you can layer on. I've only ever played the base game. The base game is really, really simple. You've got a stack of hex tiles. You've got a tile in the middle of the table. And on your turn, you've got two tiles in front of you. And the tiles are double-sided. So you've got two on top, that the tops that your opponent can see. And you've got the backs that your opponents can't see. And what you're trying to do is one of you is trying to build land masses. And one of you is trying to build sea masses. And you're basically laying a tile out. And again, you've got this push-pull of, do I want to work on mine? Or do I need to fuck my opponent? Because they're looking like they're about to close off a chunky little landmass or an ocean mass. It's delightfully simple. You cannot play Land vs. Sea for 3 years and open the box and go, yeah, hey, here you go. Two tiles, set it up, and go. It's an 80-second refresh on the rules, if that. You really got to just talk about some of the other small icons and how the points work. And really, it's a delight. The Peanut loves Land vs. Sea. She has this, I'll call it disability. It's not a disability, but she has this disability in that she only chases like 75 pointers. She's like, 3 points. I don't want a 3-pointer. That said, she has beat my ass on a number of times with Land vs. Sea. And I say, I haven't played in 2 years. So she was 9 or so last time she played, and still manages to beat me because it's a really easy thing to teach and easy thing to learn. We played Land vs. Sea. I can't remember who won between Hoy and I, but we thoroughly enjoyed ourselves. And the fact that we got 4 board games played with that amount of poison coursing through our veins is a fair triumph, I must say. So that was all 2 weeks ago. And last week, at the start of the week, but managed to get some good stuff in. The Peanut, the Fox, and I, we played a game of Fliptoons. Now, Fliptoons was a gift, I believe, for Christmas from the lovely Project L. And Fliptoons is this, I'll use the term silly little game. It's not silly. It's basically just a market rinse repeat game, which is really quite clever in as much as what it's able to do with such a small rule set. So in Fliptoons, you have all these cards. Everyone has an identical 6-card starting set. And the cards have a point value on them, and they have sometimes a little extra zing on them. Might be a power, might be something you do when you get the card from the market, might be something that happens when you play it into a certain spot. It might be something that leverages another card that's either out on the table for you or your opponents or in the market, or a card that's in your tableau. And basically what you're doing at the start of your turn is you're going to play 6 cards, left to right, 1, 2, 3, and then a second row below it, 4, 5, 6. And then you're going to tally up your points. Now, they're ostensibly performing animals. It's called Fliptoons. They're animated in the style of like early 80s animation, but ostensibly they're kind of circus animal-y, right? I would guess it's like a circus animal thing. And what you're trying to generate is fame points. So if a card has 2 points on it, you get 2 points. If a card says this card's worth 2 points and it's worth an extra point for every dog on the table, well, then you can look at the fox's tableau and the peanut's tableau and the market, and you get extra points. Now, that's not how it works. Dogs work differently. You get 5 points for a dog if there's another one on the table, but it's an example of how they leverage each other. And then you use those points So whatever points, let's say you get the first round, you get 6 points, which is pretty common. You get 6 points. For 5 points, you can dismiss one of your cards, right? And I think caterpillars you can dismiss for three. So if I have 6 points, I dismiss one for five. I have 1 point left, useless to me, but I've gotten one out of my hand, right? You don't necessarily want to do that unless you've got a seventh card coming in. So instead, you might buy a card from the market. And so the cards in the market are priced left to right. They're like 5, 7, 10, 13, 15. I might have those wrong, but that's the idea. And what happens is as the cards come out, their value in what they contribute in points is reordered. So if, for example, I pull a card out and it's value 3, it will go between a 2 and a 4 if they already exist. So you reshuffle the market every time. So the high-value point cards are always the most expensive. That I like a lot because it means you, unlike a lot of markets where if you draw one, they all march to the left, sometimes you get a glorious card that is just magnificent and you get it for almost nothing. That doesn't happen in Fliptoons. The good cards are always the most expensive. So instead, you might buy a card from the market on your first turn, and that goes in, and then at the end of the round, you shuffle all your cards together again. You lose any fame. Fame doesn't carry over, so you reset your fame to 0, and then you go again. You play 1, 2, 3 at the top, 4, 5, 6 on the bottom. If you've bought a card, you will have a spare card in your hand, so you're not guaranteeing that you're actually getting that new card out. But you now might have 8 points of fame in round two. And so for 8 points, you go, I'm going to dismiss Caterpillar and I'm going to buy that 5 point card from the market because the cards in the market are all better than your starting cards. So you dismiss the Caterpillar, you buy the card from the market, and all of a sudden you're back to having 7 cards in your hand, but they're better than you had before. Round three, same thing, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But this time you might choose just to dismiss a card instead of buying a card, and then you're back down to 6 cards. And you know you're getting all 6 of those good cards out. So it's that push-pull. It's what do I want to do? Do I want to stack my deck with power cards? Do I want to flush it out and keep it clean? I'm not sure the Peanuts worked out how important it is to keep down around 6 or 7 cards because she buys and buys and buys and buys and buys. And then towards the end of the game, she's like, well, why am I only getting 12 points when you've got 27? I'm like, well, honey, because you need to spend some time clearing out all the garbage. The last time we played, she went, she didn't swear, but I can see in her head, she was like, oh, fuck. Okay, I see what we did there. And it's, you know, it's really straightforward. It's a race to 30. So the first person who gets to 30, the game will end. The person who gets to 30 will take the, it's like the superstar director's card or whatever, which gives you a +3. And then you'll play one more round of buying and flipping. And whoever has the highest points in that last round wins. Fliptoons, it's a piece of cake to teach. The art is adorable. It's a bit rinse-repeat as a game, but the amount of game they're able to pack into that rinse-repeat is really clever. And it, again, it's a 15-minute exercise. It's 20 minutes at best. It's fun, it's breezy, and I always have a blast playing Fliptoons. That is designed by Jordi Adan, Renato Simoes, and the art's by Diego Sa, and it's published by Thunderworks. So after that, because that was basically Sunday night last week, it was a very campaigny week this week for games. Very campaigny. I'm not talking about Kickstarter campaign or GameFound campaign. I'm talking about campaigny. So I finally went back to Agamonia. Agamonia the world. Agamonia the game. It is in a big, fat box with wild, weird art on the outside. Agamonia's art style is very stylized. If you've never seen it, have a look. The minis are all baby pink and baby blue. I mean, you could paint them if you like, but the art aesthetic and the art on the scenarios, it is neon is the best way I could describe it. And I hadn't played Agamonia in a very long time, so I had to go back and relearn it a little bit. I made a couple of mistakes in the first opening salvos of the scenario. No big deal. I'm playing it by myself. Who cares? But I am playing Agamonia four-handed solo. And Agamonia as a campaign system is a freaking delight. It really, really is. You know, playing four-handed solo, it's not like trying to play a three or four multi-handed solo of Jaws of the Lion or Gloomhaven, which I tried and I couldn't do. I could have done it for Jaws because it's simpler, but I tried playing Gloomhaven, multi-handed, and it's just there's too much going on with the card play. Whereas in Agamonia, you have a series of actions that your character can take. It's one, two, three, four. There are five actions at the level I'm at. The higher your level, the more actions you get to choose from. And basically, at the start of the scenario, you're going to slot tiles into those actions. You've got a bundle of tiles. Each one's an action. And the action might be magic related. It might be healing. It might be hurling a boulder, right? And they have area of effect or distance or range, whatever the case is. And you're basically building out your character for the scenario by slotting these little tiles into the player board. The player board's this lovely dual-layered system. And these tiles click in, and they're beautiful. And then you start. And on your turn, all you're going to do is you're going to decide which of those actions each of the four characters is going to take. And it's not like you've got a deck of the deck of cards in Gloomhaven where you're looking at it and you're going, oh my God, like so many things I could do here. Sorry, this might be a little disjointed. There was a minor interruption in the bunker. So back to Agamonia. And it is a delight of a system. That's all I'm going to say about it. I had to relearn it. I'm happy to be back in Agamonia. If you have any interest in campaign games, Agamon is easily one of the best I've ever played. Look, I've played a lot of great campaign games, but certainly the best I've played solo, for sure. And beyond that, well, didn't we just yesterday finish cycle two of Aeon Trespass Odyssey? Now, Aeon Trespass, I talk about a lot in this game, this game podcast. But Aeon Trespass, it's a lifestyle, right? It's like Kingdom Death Monster. You don't pick it up unless you're really interested in committing part of your life for the rest of your life, really. But Super Trooper and I, we finished cycle two. There are five cycles. We finished cycle two. It was a whole day. We started about 9. We finished at about 8 at night, maybe a half past 8, with a victory. Eventually, we had three tries at the final battle. Luckily, there's a resource you have where you can reset yourself. It's not like Gloomhaven, where if you fail a battle, you just go, oh, we'll just start it again. You have to have a Sisyphus tier in Aeon Trespass, so you can push that ball up the hill all over again. We finished cycle two. It was a glorious finish. It was just one of the best days. So Aeon Trespass cycle two is done. We still have the epilogue to play because there's an epilogue for each chapter, which is a couple of hours of, right. There's no real battles and such in it. It's just more narrative and setting you up for the next chapter, which I believe we will be starting soon. Aeon Trespass finished cycle two. It was wonderful, great experience. The narrative, the way it ended, it was just magnificent. We have had half a peek at cycle three because we had to pull some stuff out. We had some wonderful reveals at cycle two where we said, go get this from the cycle three stuff. And cycle three has, I won't even tell you, I don't want anyone who's in cycle one, I don't want any spoilers here for you, but cycle three has some fucking banana shit in it. It's just wild where it's going in cycle three. So that was it. Aeon Trespass, we finished cycle two. It was wonderful. And those were the games that were. We're going to take a break now and pump some ads into your ear holes so that I can finance this beautiful little podcast, at least in tiny parts. Stand by. Boxes on the doorstep, new delights inside. Heaven's on fire, fields to divide. Thank you kindly for suffering that. I am back and I appreciate it. Feel free to fast forward through those. I think if you skip them, they still count. I couldn't care less, to be honest. I'm not here for the money because, I think you listen to an ad, I get 1/10 of a cent or something. But I appreciate that 1/10 of a cent. It's your time. All right. Incoming. Not a massive week, 2 weeks for incoming stuff, but some good stuff. So first up, shout out to Dean from Advent Games. I got two expansions for Pirates of Maracaibo, which I had pre-ordered a while ago. They finally released on our shores. One of those, I think, is Captains, and one's called Bermuda Triangle. They add asymmetrical starts. I'm a big fan of Pirates of Maracaibo. I think it's a fantastic game. It's great solo. It's a wonderful solo game, but I've played it multiplayer a couple times, and it's easy to teach. It feels and tastes like Maracaibo without the uber death crunch that Maracaibo comes with. And don't get me wrong, I'm a big fan of Maracaibo. We're still working through the campaign of Maracaibo, that Super Trooper Dusty and I. We need to get back to it. We haven't played since before Dusty was in Europe last year, so we're probably coming up on at least a year since we played Maracaibo. But I really like Maracaibo. Actually, I got birthday games coming up this month. If Dusty's around on the Saturday, maybe we'll squeeze a Maracaibo in. We'll see. Watch this space. So those two arrived. And also, my copy of The Old King's Crown has arrived. The Old King's Crown has been sold out worldwide, thanks to, in a large part, to Efka on, no pun included, singing its praises on his YouTube channel. I had actually ordered mine before that, but only just before. And yeah, look, it's here. It's in the bunker. It's still sitting in shrink. I've looked at the solo mode for it. I'm not convinced the solo mode is something that I'm really interested in, but I will give it a go. But the art is fantastic. The gameplay is just, it's so spicy, the gameplay. And it's not fuck you or take that, but it is essentially, it's a glorified lane battler. And I just love the look of it. Old King's Crown is also coming back to GameFound, I believe, this week with a reprint and some expansions. So I will be looking at the expansion content because I haven't played yet, but I really love the way it looks. And I mean love the way it looks for gameplay in this instance. The production is nothing to sneeze at, right? It really is. There's nothing to sneeze at in the production. But the gameplay looks fabulous, and I am very much looking forward to that. In fact, if I can, I am at the Board Game Barbecue Day on, I believe it's the 14th of this month, on the Saturday. If you're there, give a shout out. I'll wear my OMC t-shirt. I may try and squeeze a game of Old King's Crown in on that day if I can. We'll see. Watch this space. And then, I had a wonderful February financially. And look, I'm not bragging. I'm just telling the story. You know, I'm very lucky, the position I'm in. I have a wonderful job that I love. My wife has a wonderful job that I love. And no, that's not an error. I love that she has the job she does, because it means that we have quite a comfortable life. And February is a good month, always every year in February. So there's always a little bit of splash cash comes out in February. So I have decided to take the plunge, and I invested, I don't know if you call it investment. It's not an investment. It becomes a new black hole for your life. But I bought a 3D printer, which arrived last week and has been running hot ever since. And it will be the end of my love affair, unfortunately, with Folded Space. My dear Folded Space, I love you with all my heart. I've been a Folded Space junkie for about 5 years. I have Folded Space inserts all around me. I have loved every minute with Folded Space. And I now can just go bloop and print whatever I like for inserts or deluxe components. So anyway, we may circle back to this one in Voices in My Head. Spoiler alert. And that's it for incoming. Welcome to FOMO Mofo, where I take you through my personal angst-ridden journey of capitalist acquisitionism. As always, this is not an exhaustive list of crowdfunding projects, but merely those that have my personal attention, either because they are by a design and development team I like, a theme I enjoy, or because they have pretty toys. Don't I love the toys? And in a perfect world, it is all three. Sweet baby cheeses, it is ramping up again for 2026. Hold on to your wallets. And my words to live by are, no browsing crowdfunding while drinking wine. Not that I've ever pledged for anything while my decision-making lizard brain is in an impaired state. That has definitely never happened. But it's going to be a wild ride. It started. It's starting back again. So first up, Awaken Realms. Whew. Awaken Realms, man, they're a juggernaut in crowdfunding, and they deserve to be. They make great stuff that's overproduced, that's made just for little fangirlies like me who love lots of plastic and stuff. They now have what I'm calling the Black Friday pledge method. They have just launched the Labyrinth Chronicles, which is a 40-year-old board game. It's got the Awaken Realms treatment, and it's got all the bling. If you're not familiar with Labyrinth, I wasn't familiar with Labyrinth. I'd never really played Labyrinth growing up. Labyrinth is basically a game of trying to puzzle your way through the labyrinth to collect little tokens, and each turn, the labyrinth is going to shift. All the columns and rows, you know, go through a process throughout the game where they shift, and sometimes that opens new paths up, sometimes it blocks things off entirely. And you're trying to scoot through and grab little tokens. It's competitive, it's co-op, it's gorgeous to look at. Let's not fuck around. It is absolutely gorgeous to look at. And their version, of course, has got 3D labyrinths that are all sun-dropped, 3D portals that are all sun-dropped. I mean, it seems to still have cardboard tokens for all the little treasures you're picking up. And I'm sure by the end of the campaign, that will be fixed. But they're calling it Express Crowdfunding, which is a new GameFound model. Of course, GameFound is owned in part by Awaken Realms, which would make perfect sense if you can vertically integrate that part of your world when that part of your world is giving you millions upon millions of dollars, then that would make perfect sense. So they're calling it Express Crowdfunding, which could easily be translated as all the FOMO. I'm calling it the Black Friday pledge method. And basically, Express Crowdfunding is the campaign opens, And they're like, hey, we've got 1,000 copies now. And they will mail out the second they finish selling, right? So if you want to, the campaign opens at this time. If you're first in and you want one of the express copies, it's ready. There's no development on this game. We're not waiting for anything in particular, but we have 1,000 copies, and they were able to just, you know, break those up by region. So wherever they were, you know, for Australia, North America, and Europe, and blah, blah, blah. And they said, if you get on early and you get one of these express copies, it's coming to you now. It's coming now, right? Like, saddle up, bitches, it's coming. And so, God bless her, Project L got up at 3 a.m. or something the other day to log on and go to GameFound to try and nab herself one of the all-in Sundrop Uber Deluxe pledges for Labyrinth Chronicles. So, the all-in deluxe version, and let's be honest, if you're getting a game like Labyrinth made by Awakened Realms, it's the only version. I don't know why you would go to Awakened Realms to buy the basic version of Labyrinth. I don't understand. Like, Awakened Realms at this point, you don't go there to get something that isn't completely overblown and overproduced. But the deluxe version with all the bits, it's $225 Australian, which, to be fair, I think it's fair. You know, there's a lot of Sundrop plastic in there. There's a lot of tangible 3D chunky pieces, and shipping's another $47, which comes out to 21%. It looks gorgeous. Here's my issues, if you can call them that. If you can call my issues. And I managed to watch, thank you to Paul Grogan. He's had a couple of playthroughs. There's been plenty of unboxings, but Paul Grogan in particular has had a couple of playthroughs. I think he's played through the first 3 sessions of the campaign. There's a small campaign, like a 10-session campaign, which I think is quite clever, because from what I can tell, a game of Labyrinth is about 20 minutes, and I'm not shitting on a 20-minute game, but when your 20-minute game comes in a half cubic meter box at the cost of $250, I kind of go, hey, like, really, that's my issue, is it's going to take you 20 minutes to set the game up, maybe not, but 15, and then a game's 20 minutes long, and then it's another 15 minutes to put it away if you're not playing 2 or 3 sessions back to back. Now, I haven't watched any of the campaign stuff, largely because I'm really looking forward to playing this. And I like a little campaign, and I think because of the way the game is, it's the kind of game that the Peanut will play. Absolutely. I'll be waiting in line because, thankfully, Miss Project L has been successful. She got online, and she got one of those copies, so it's coming to her soon-ish. And she and her spawn will play through it, and then she'll go, hey, Hammers, do you want to borrow Labyrinth Chronicles? And I'll go, shit, yeah, you bet I do. Here's the other 7 games you've loaned me in exchange back from my library. I would love to borrow Labyrinth Chronicles. And to be honest, if it's 20 minutes a game, I reckon the Peanut, I will knock it over in 2 weeks. I'm absolutely grateful that Project L has bought it, because I will get to experience it. For me, I couldn't part with $250 for a game that takes 20 minutes to play. And as I said, that's my issue. I don't think it is an issue, because, as I said, it's a beautiful looking game. Awakened Realms. And Awakened Realms doesn't disappoint. So I'm safe from having to spend my money. Sorry that maybe you had to spend your own. Not sorry to Project L. Just the rest of you. So that's Awakened Realms, Labyrinth Chronicles. It's live right now. I'm also tracking and was looking at Inferno 1348. Now, Inferno 1348 is an expansion. Inferno has been around for quite some time and, you know, has quite a following. It's basically it's a Euro that takes place, you know, in the lore of Dante and, you know, the 7 levels of hell. And I haven't looked overly deep into it, to be honest. It was on my radar largely just because it popped up and I got ads for it. I'm like, well, this really looks good. I've watched a little bit. I've watched some older reviews on the original Inferno, and I've watched some some takes on the new 1348, I think. I'm not sold on the gameplay for me personally. I think the board looks beautiful. I think the pieces look stunning. I think the production is amazing. This campaign's on GameFound right now is for basically the Deluxe Collector's Edition. So you can't actually just... I don't think you can buy the expansion separately. Or maybe you can. Although they do. They do have 6 or 7 levels of upgrades depending on what you've had before. But I believe they all include the expansion and the collector's box and all the new stuff. But if you're... You know, this is for the Collector's Edition. The production... As I said, it looks fabulous. It really does. They're quote-unquote promising delivery before the end of the year. We've all heard that before, but really, when anyone says, yeah, you'll have it by Christmas, I'm like, Christmas which year, buddy? And I don't care. I don't care, but don't pull the wool over my eyes. Maybe. I mean, it's March. Today is March. Having a game that is not finished crowdfunding is going to be here by Christmas. You better be ready to hit go on it. So who knows? The full enchilada is $400 Australian, with shipping is another $47. So that's only 12%. But you're basically looking at $450 for a game where the gameplay isn't really grabbing me. And it's a no for me. But in this modern era of 2026, $400 for a crowdfunding game, I mean, yeah, it's a lot. But it's also not. Like, I mean, and we'll come back to that. We'll come full circle on that. But for me, a $400 game, like, I spent $235, I remember, because I bought it aftermarket. I didn't get all the Kickstarter whiz bang extra deluxe stuff. But I got Retail Agamonia for $235. And let me tell you, I'm going to get my money's worth 10 times over with that. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. And that said, I have happily spent $300 and $400 on games. It's just, I don't think there's $300 or $400 worth of game in this for me. But if you are an Inferno fan, let me tell you, it looks beautiful. If you love Inferno or even really like Inferno, I might feel differently if I'd actually played it, to be honest. But $450, it's not for me. But it's there. It's there. And don't rush, because Pledge Manager, late pledges will open, right? It's open for another 12 days. You can bet the Pledge Manager will open sometime later. You'll have plenty of time. Up next, another big chonky of the chonky. This is from IV Studios, who I'm becoming more and more of a fan of. You know, I have a couple of games by IV Studios. I have the Pillars of Fate and Scales of Fate that recently fulfilled. There's another campaign that's fulfilling later in the year. Oh, it's a solo battler. What was it called? I'm going to pause and look it up because it's worth it. Honor's End. Honor's End's fulfilling later in the year, and it really looks fabulous. I'm very much looking forward to that. It's allegedly you can play two-player, but it's a one-player game, which I'm always grateful for. But this, and they've also got their Veiled Fate, which they've done. I think Moonrakers is theirs. They've got some really big games out there, and they've got a reputation for their production. This is, of course, for Fractured Sky. Fractured Sky is back on Kickstarter with an expansion. Now, I remember Fractured Sky coming to Kickstarter originally, I want to say 3 years ago. Does that sound right? I think it was in Kickstarter 3 years ago, maybe. And looking at it going, oh, that looks really pretty. But the gameplay didn't grab me at the time, you know. And I think at the time, it's not so much, but I want to say at the time, I was probably like, hey, it's heavy Euros or fuck off for me, right? I just was really like in that space of like, I was just, oh, I want to play midweight to heavy Euros. And I looked at this and I went, oh, yeah, okay, I could see. Okay, so, you know, fast forward a number of years. I'm a little more of an Omni gamer, and I'm okay with that. Hi, my name's James, and I'm an Omni gamer. Not quite. There are games I will not play, but that's not because of their style. That's because the game sucks. I'm not going to name any names because I've already done that, you know, and I'm a nice guy. It's all positivity here in OMC. So Fractured Sky. The way Fractured Sky plays is you've got a screen with 10 discs behind it. 10 discs. And you've got these little airships that are going out on the board. And before you put the airship out on the board, you bring it behind your screen and you collect one of these discs, which are, of course, magnetized, right? Magnets. Everybody loves magnets. And then you grab one and the little airship goes out and you plunk it down into a space. This is an area majority game. Now, no one can see the value of the disc you've plunked on the bottom of your ship. Now, you have 1 through 10, I believe. It might be scaled slightly, but I don't think so. And the thing that's important to note is that in each round, you can only deploy 10 as a total, right? Oh, there are zeros. That's right. There are a couple of zeros. Because if you put your 10 out, you have to send two zeros out. And the 1 and the 10 have a white rim around them. So when you deploy them, your opponents know it's a 1 or a 10. So you can do a little bit of hot bluffing with it. And what happens is you're going to, I believe you put, over the course of a round, you put 3 of these ships out. And there's a few other things you can do. You can buy buildings and put them out, and they give you extra presence in spaces. You can put markets out, and they give you extra resources, because where you are with your ships is going to generate resources, which allow you to buy more buildings. And each round, you're drafting a special ship from memory as well. I think that's really clever. So you've got the blind bit where nobody knows what's on there. If it's white, they know it's a 1 or a 10. But they know between those 3 ships, you've only got 10 all up. End of the round, you reveal your chips. Whoever has the most wins the area. They get the most benefits. Everyone gets a little bit of something out of the area in the end. But whoever wins the most gets the most benefits. And you rinse and repeat. There are hidden goals up at the top. and you can spend certain resources to get a peek at those goals. And I think Fractured Sky actually looks like a very, very clever game at this point in my gaming love. And it plays in about 75 minutes. And okay, and I'm going to fall back on this because you know how I feel about toys. Fractured Sky has a deluxe edition. Fractured Sky has a super deluxe edition. Okay, they've actually called it super deluxe. They're not hiding behind anything. They're not like, hey, platinum, or hey, this is the captains, this is the emeralds. They're like, fuck that. Here's the deluxe edition. Get the deluxe. The deluxe is great. Here's the super deluxe. Do you want the super deluxe? Right? We're going to line these models up on the table with a razor blade and give you a straw. Would you like the super deluxe hammers? I'm holding strong at this point. You know, it's the super deluxe. It's another $400 game, right? Is there $400 worth of game there? Nope. Nope. It's not a $400 board game. Is there $400 worth of production in there? Go have a look and decide for yourself. Honestly, I'm definitely not backing Fractured Sky. Especially, I'm definitely also not backing for the metal rift markers. Definitely not. So, yeah. Because if you win an area, you get a rift marker. And at the end, the winner is who has the most rift markers. And I'm definitely not backing for that. No, definitely not. That's not who I am. That's Fractured Sky. Up next, this is Perch. Now, Perch, I think, looks fantastic. So, specifically on Kickstarter, this is Perch, Birds of Play. It's the Birds of Play expansion. Now, Perch basically is a, it's another area majority game. And it's an area majority game with a whole lot of elbows at the table, basically. Each round, what's going to happen is you're going to draw, I believe, a number of little birds out of a bag, and you're going to add a couple of your own. And then in a round, you're going to put those out. And each little area where birds are going out has different scoring requirements, much like a recording, scoring, yeah, scoring requirements. So if you think much like El Grande, where you've got your little tiles that go out that say first place gets 3 points, second place gets 2 points, third place gets nothing, for example. And really, it's going to be a bit about, I say a bit about how many of your birds are in there at the end of the round. At the end of the round, if you have the most birds, you're going to get the first score. If you have the second most amount of birds, you're going to get the second score, et cetera, et cetera. The zingy bit on this one is sometimes second place pays more points, or sometimes third place pays more points. In between these areas will be ponds. You can, as an extra action, fly one of your birds over to the pond, and it will score for both connected areas. When I say score, it will add to your presence to both connected areas. There are a number of little modules that layer on top of that. There's these gorgeous acrylic standees because there are other animals that make appearances and they do different things. Perch looks like this delightful little friendly game that is absolutely a close quarters knife fight. And I think it looks spectacular. This is done by Inside Up Games. They're also a small publisher, and you might remember Inside Up Games from last year's campaign for Calypso with a K. This was an ocean Waterworld-esque tile layer, and the boards had this interesting sticky tech on them, so the tiles didn't slide around. They've also brought us games like Earth and Terminus. I haven't played Terminus, but I really enjoyed Earth. I should probably get some of those expansions. I've heard the expansions for Earth are really good. The deluxe version of Perch is beautiful. It's beautiful. You've got 3D birds' nests and bird feeders. You've got little acrylic standees for the animals. There's a version with minis, but I actually think the acrylic standees are nicer. And the deluxe version, I want to say deluxe, I mean, this is the acrylic standee version, not the uber deluxe version. It's $82 Australian. Now, if you are on this fair island country with me, you know $82 barely buys your rule book most days. Shipping's $25. Shipping is $25, but comes in at over 30%, right? And which is a lot for a game, but I think it's 30% because the game's not expensive, right? Shipping at $25, I don't know where you get a Kickstarter ship for less than $25, to be honest. You know, they want to protect it, they want to make sure it gets to you. But to be honest, we're talking about $100 basically for a game that looks fantastic. The production looks great. It looks like it's gonna be super fun. It would literally be rude not to back this one. I'm just gonna say it would be rude. So that's Perch. It's on Kickstarter. It's on right now. I think it's on for another 15, 16 days or so. And I think it looks great. Last one for the day. This is Lunar Rush Innovations. Now, Lunar Rush wasn't really on my radar at all as a game. It's been around for a few years. Again, it's another small indie publisher. This is Dead Alive Games. It wasn't on my radar. It fell into my lap. I think it was a subject of one of my colleagues, another content creator, So Very Wrong About Games, did a piece about it with The Hungry Gamer, and they talked about it, and they were talking about the campaign and how good the game was. And I thought, oh, Lunar Rush. So I had a look at it. Lunar Rush is essentially a cube pusher. It's a trading game. It's basically an economic game. And not to make it sound overly dry, because again, I've been using the word spicy a lot today. This should be called the spicy episode. In Lunar Rush, you're basically transporting goods between Earth and the Moon. I think it's Earth and the Moon. Could be Mars. I think it's Earth and the Moon. That's why it's called Lunar Rush. And on your turn, you're going to be bidding, and highest bidder will go first, and you'll be picking trade routes. Now, some trade routes are really fast, but they're going to come back with less resources, and some trade routes are really slow, and they're going to come back with more resources. And then there's a fluctuating economy back on Earth or the Moon, wherever they're going to. I think you're going to the Moon and you're coming back with resources. And when you come back, you're going to have the first dibs at the market. And the more things that are sold into the market, the cheaper those goods will be. So if you're coming late, your goods might not be worth as much. I haven't looked too deeply into that market as to how many different goods there are. But it's also largely simultaneous play. Right, so simultaneous play, you're gonna be pushing stuff around, and it plays in about 75 minutes. Now there is a deluxe version of this. Of course, this is a deluxe version of everything with dual layer boards and some acrylic stuff. The deluxe version of this is $250. I didn't make a note of shipping, so my apologies. I didn't look at the shipping on this, but you can split this into what does Kickstarter call it? Pay over time, pledge over time kind of thing. It's not exactly stretch pay, but you can split into three payments. I think I'm probably in on this one. I don't have a game like this in my collection. It's not that I need a game in every sort, but I think this simultaneous play market manipulation. Because I'll tell you, one of the things I love about Raccoon Tycoon is you can teach a 10-year-old how to play it, but it's got market manipulation and auctions, and you can play some decent mind games with people at the table. I think I really like that, and I love that fluctuating market. You've got the fluctuating market on Sky Mines, which I adore. I really like the market on Sky Mines. When I talk about the market, in that case, we're talking about the share market, where you can push that up and up and up. I like the fluctuating market looks of this. I like the simultaneous play. I like the fact that you can play it in 75 minutes. You can get four games in a day instead of two with something like Lunar Rush. And the expansion adds a little bit of asymmetry. It adds a few more bits and pieces. And again, this is a small publisher, and I'm really liking the output of small publishers right now. I think there's a lot of really good stuff coming out from indie folks, and I just want to give them my money. That's all I'm looking at this week, peeps. There's a lot more out there. There's a lot more coming this week. If you missed it, Awakened Realms announced something like $900 million worth of crowdfunding projects for 2026. Okay. All right, it's not $900 million, but in that they're including, there's 320 strong decks that will be Nemesis, Aetherfields, and Tainted Grail, which it's just so good. There's Nemesis Legacy, which is going to get all the money. All the money. Nemesis Legacy will have all the monies, So I'm off to sell a kidney because I thought it was going to be a quiet year for crowdfunding, but it is not. 2026 is going to be an amazing year for fulfillments as well. So happy times, great thoughts, optimism all the way. It's going to be a great year. This week on Voices in My Head, I want to talk about the March Hare. Now, you may have not read Alice in Wonderland. I don't know why you wouldn't have read Alice in Wonderland. Not only is it a classic, it's a great story, and it was written by a guy who's high on opium. So why would you not have read Alice in Wonderland? Anyway, in Alice in Wonderland, of course, you've got the March Hare who manages to get Alice's attention, and then he jumps down the rabbit hole. And Alice, who's too curious to contain herself, she follows him down the rabbit hole. So I want to talk about rabbit holes. Because in board games, that fucking March Hare is all about dragging us into corners that we never knew we wanted to be in before, right? It's a great example. When you first got into board games, did you basically go from no games to 25 games overnight? I don't mean overnight, maybe in 3 months. I don't have any modern board games. Oh, look, I have 25 board games. Oh, look, I need a Kallax shelf. I need another. Okay, yes, I feel targeted by my own statement. That was me. to some extent, it is still me. It's what happens when you have a man-child with disposable income jumping down a rabbit hole. What's your poison? Right? I want to say 25 years ago, I was all over Warhammer, right? Back in the early noughts, I had a 2,000 point Dark Eldar army. It was painted to 11 out of 10. I was manic. This was back when minis were metal as well. They were so chunky, so good, and you had to assemble them. They were metal. It was such a pain to put metal together because the glue, oh man, it was such a pain. Once you finally got them together though and painted, and you'd have like this elder mounted on the back of a dragon, and it was like 900 grams or something. It was so amazing. So I can paint minis. I just genuinely can't be bothered anymore. But back then, oh man, I had a painting setup that was just, yeah, and I loved it. I loved it. Loved it. As I said, I had a 2,000 point army. I didn't play very often, but I had a 2,000 point army that was built to rules, and it was gorgeous, and it had ballista, and oh man, the Cauldron of Blood was such a beautiful model, right? Like if you were never a Warhammer nerd, but the Cauldron of Blood was this gorgeous model. Anyway, these days I would love to paint. I just can't be bothered, and it's more of a time thing, really. And I'm really grateful that, in Aeon Trespass, Super Trooper started taking the models home and bringing them back painted, which is lovely. I've just invested in a small cheap project. I've got myself a set of acrylic paint textures or markers. Don't judge me, but I want to see if maybe if I just can base the models and maybe throw a single contrast and then do the detail with the markers. We'll see. We'll see, because I would like to be painting. I have painted my mechs for Anachrony are gorgeous. I have painted a few of the models for Aeon Trespass. I did a pretty good job of Hecaton. He looked pretty good. But anyway, painting models. Who out there is painting models? Who out there wants to paint models but doesn't have time? Who out there wants to paint models but can't just like? But then you're playing with gray models. That's why I love Sundrop. Right, another rabbit hole. Anyway, which poison? Warhammer. So for Christmas last year, I bought Project L, an army speed paint starter kit. I think there were 16 paints in there because she mentioned in passing last year that, oh, I might like to try mini painting. So yeah, I go to that for Christmas, and she is like, "Where's that March hare? I'm going down the rabbit hole. Fuck y'all!" Woo! And now she's like, "I need more models. I need more paint. Nuln oil. What's Nuln oil? I need some Nuln oil. More brushes." She has literally drunk the Kool-Aid on that one. I have no complaints because I'm quietly hoping she will get good and then run out of minis to paint. And I can go, "Hey, Project L, would you like some more minis? Now that you're doing a good job of them, would you like these ATO minis? Would you like these minis for Egemonia? Would you like all my minis for Wonderland's War?" Which I say I based the other day. I based them like a year and a half ago in a black. And now we're playing with like Vanta Black minis when we play Wonderland's War. I had every intention. Like, "Hey, would you like to paint my Wonderland's War minis? That would be great." So, yes, I'm quietly hoping that she's going to get really good at painting minis and then run out of minis because I have a few. But that March Hare, he doesn't just run down one rabbit hole. There's a whole series of them, right? And we follow them all. Deluxe parts, deluxe components, right? Once you've got games and you look at deluxe components, you're like, "Oh, metal coins? Sure, let's have some metal coins. Minis instead of cardboard standees? Yeah, I'll have some of those too. Yeah. Acrylic tokens? Oh, yeah." Yeah, it's like there's a guy in a back alley with a fucking trench coat with all the parts, and they go, Hey, man, you want to deluxify your game? Because I'll tell you what, I sure do. I sure ass do. Playmats. I flip back and forth on playmats all the time. I have a number of playmats that I really like. I try to avoid playmats for everything because I don't really have a space to put them. And if I'm being honest, the art on playmats is sometimes, oftentimes, quite inferior to boards. But where I have a game where there's a lot of chips or there's a lot of bits I want to pick up, I do like playmats a lot. I do. And so I have a number of them. I know people are like, "It's playmat or nothing, man. You got a playmat? I want a playmat." And I'm like, I'm looking around the bunker. If everything had a playmat in here, I would literally probably die from neoprene fumes. It's that wild. But I get it. Oh, I get it, right? Let's talk inserts. I have been a folded space junkie for a long time. And now I have two wooden inserts. One was gifted to me by Super Trooper, and that's for Terraforming Mars because he ended up with the Terraforming Mars Uber box. And so I have a broken token wooden insert in there. I have a beautiful wooden insert with acrylic lids, and it's all engraved for Spirit Island. It is gorgeous because Spirit Island, of course, I have all the upgrades for Spirit Island. I bought them off Etsy and third-party market. But by and large, it's been folded space or nothing for me, largely because they're inexpensive. They're inexpensive. They're easy to put together. They're convenient. I really, really like them. But you want to talk rabbit holes? Well, Hammond has just bought himself a 3D printer, and it is just a joy and a half, right? You know, and my eldest daughter Lou's in IT, and she's like, "Oh, I've not really, done any, don't really know anything about 3D printing." But Dad, you don't know anything about modeling. I'm like, "Kid, I need to know how to push a button because you can go into Thingiverse or you can go into Bamboo Labs." Database, and there are 10,000 things there that you can be a strategically shaved monkey. And you just go, "I like that. I'm going to put that in, and I want it this color, and this color, and this color. And I'll see you in 5 hours, bitch. I am coming back to a new toy." Oh, man. I'll tell you what, like, it's so. The printers themselves, I say it's economic. It's economical if you have some money, right? The printers aren't, I would say, compared to. And my printer is not a brand new one. And I say it's new, but it's not a newest model. It's probably a 3-year-old model. And it is fantastic. It's fantastic. It merges with my iPhone. It merges with my desktop top app. And the first thing I did was I bought Aberration at PAX last year. And I was there. And it was all deluxe. When I say all deluxe, it was 98% deluxe. And the designers and the distributors were there. And I said, because I got to play it. I got to play it at PAX. It was a wonderful Aberration. It's this wonderful co-op tower defense against demons, and it's really well done. And we played it, and I said, "Have you got this here?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Okay, I'm going to take one off your hands." And I was talking to him, and I said, "Has this got all the bits in it?" And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Even those little campfires?" He goes, "Oh no, not the campfires." I'm like, "What do you mean not the campfires?" He goes, "Well, that was a Kickstarter exclusive." I'm like, "Dude, I just played with campfires. You tell me," he goes, "Yeah, there's tokens in there." So these shitty little, there's another token in there too. It's a purple one. I'll have to look it up because I can do something with that. Anyway, there's little 12 millimeter cardboard discs that are your campfires. I'm like, "I can't play with that. That's unacceptable." So of course, and this is one of the, I've got a lot of games that can use deluxification still in the bunker, but the one that always stood out, we would say in Australia, say it stands out like dog's balls, because if your dog hasn't been snipped, you can see those from 5 miles away, was the campfires for Aberration. So I hopped on, I logged in, got all set up, I just searched campfire and went bing. I'm like, "It's right there. It's like 14 mils across. It's two colors, got brown logs and orange flames." I'm like, "Well, I've never printed anything before, so let's just do a quick test. Just give me like five of them." Like, bzz, 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 bzz. Five beautiful little campfires. I think I need 15 or 18 for the game. I'm like, "It's in the queue. Campfires, done. Boom. Finished." There's an orange one there. I think it is the stun tokens as well. They were a Kickstarter exclusive, so I'll have to look at those and see what I can find. They're purple. So we're doing that. It's been running hot ever since. It only arrived. It's Sunday. It arrived on Friday. And it's been running hot ever since. I'm currently running through the prints for this spectacular setup for Shackleton Base. It's going to augment the inserts that are in this. So Shackleton Base comes with these gorgeous little tuck boxes, but these have inserts for the tuck boxes because the tuck boxes are just full of crap. There's just stuff rattling around in there. And then the rest of the components are all done. And then in Shackleton Base, you've got these little dome buildings you're putting out. Well, can't you just print off 3D domes? Yes, you can. Do they fit in this insert? You bet your ass they do. So happy. So happy. STLs, which stands for something, 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 but basically they're the files that you print. They're free everywhere. They are free everywhere. Next in line after Shackleton Base, there's a wonderful insert for Pirates of Maracaibo. Pirates of Maracaibo, just like regular Maracaibo, it's like 43 Ziploc bags chucked in a box, right? Okay, it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It's fine. But there's an insert that will hold the expansions that have just arrived. Filaments are not expensive. When I say not expensive, you can get them. They're like $25 a reel, and you can refill the reels for $18. And when you see the weights of these things that come off, it's bizarre to me how this can even happen in my house, and I can print such high quality stuff. Anyway. That's my recent rabbit hole. That's the one I'm going down now. Now, I'm still down all the others, right? I'm, I, yeah. Yeah, all that's to say is that fucking March hare, he's coaxed me down another hole, but I couldn't be happier. This week's clap, this is going specifically, and I want to say this is going to friendly local game stores, which I've probably done before, to be honest, in 55 odd episodes. This is technically episode 51, but there's a handful of bonus ones out there. I'm sure I've given the clap to friendly local game stores before, but this is specifically for Dean at Advent Games. Dean is a fucking legend. Advent Games is just north of Sydney. He has a spectacular array of products, all priced. I don't know how he prices so well as a small business. He has flat fee shipping. But in particular, I received two expansions for Pirates of Maracaibo from Dean last week. And they shipped, and I got a shipping notice, and I immediately wrote back and went, thanks, mate, love your work. And then I got another notice saying, you've been credited $8 from Advent Games. And he sent me an email going, hey, just so you know, one of the expansions was cheaper than he had anticipated when he ordered them, and he wanted to refund $8 to me for that savings. And I'm like, do you know what? He could have not, and I would never have noticed. I have never once gone back to look at how much a game is versus what I paid for once I've decided to buy a game. Never, ever once. And Dean is a businessman. He needs to make money to feed his family and do all this stuff. And that $8, I would never have noticed that $8. But maybe you would have. Maybe. I mean, sure, if you bought a game for $200 and you notice on sale for $75, you might go, oh my God, it's so much cheaper. Maybe. But once I buy a game, it's in the collection and I'm moving forward. I would never have noticed. But he sent me that $8 and it was a freaking legendary thing to do from a person who runs a small business. And, you know, that's why Dean will get my money every chance he's got what I want. So, massive clap out to Dean at Advent Games. You can reach me on all the socials. You can find me on Facebook by searching One Man Clapping. I'm on Instagram. You can email me, wonmanclapping@gmail.com, as in I won all the games. You can join the One Man Clapping Guild on BGG. Subscribe to Guild 4426. There are episode notes going in there each week as a little bit of an augment to what's happening. You can help OMC by dropping me a like on Facebook or Instagram, or by leaving a review on whatever platform you choose. If it is a bad review, I will cry only a little. Thank you as always for your time. Your time is precious, and the fact that you chose to waste an hour of it listening to how I spend my time is always humbling. Until next time, get your game on, especially if you've got to play with yourself. No notes. This week's episode has been brought to you by the March Hare, leading us all astray down the rabbit hole to Wonderland. Peace out, mofos.